Okay, thanks for coming. Next speaker is Albert Bickford of SIL International, speaking on grading the vitality of sign languages.
The expanded graded intergenerational disruption scale was developed in order to rate vitality and the level of development for languages around the world. It was based on Fishman's GIDS, G-I-D-S, and on UNESCO categories of language endangerment, and some other categories that were used in the ethnologue previously. But in order to apply eGIDS to all the languages of the world, which was our goal, we ran into a problem. Ethnologue 17 lists 137 sign languages, and there are certainly many more than that. And the way that the eGIDS was worded, and this is true also of the scales that preceded, they presupposed spoken languages. The result was wordings that were awkward or difficult to apply to sign languages, and we needed to think how to adapt the scale to fit sign languages as well. This is part of the larger issue that's very important now theoretically, the modality differences between sign and spoken languages, specifically in their sociolinguistic situation. And the immediate question was it even possible to develop one scale that would work for both signed and spoken languages? It was theoretically possible that we might have ended up with two different scales, one for each modality. That, thankfully, was not necessary, but that was one thing that we were concerned about. And there's, you know, broader questions such as how robust or fragile are sign languages? What does it mean for a sign language to be endangered? The handout that I've given has a sample of what the eGIDS looked like in section 1 in 2010, the original proposal. For those of you who weren't at Gary's talk earlier this week, I'll give you a quick summary of it. Each level has a number. The numbers correspond to numbers that Joshua Fishman used in his original GIDS. It also has a mnemonic label and a description. And then behind the scenes, there are various interpretive guidelines as to how the levels should be applied in actual practice. The upper levels are distinguished by the level of institutional support that's available for the language. The lower levels are distinguished by the degree of intergenerational transmission, the degree to which the language is being passed down from one generation to the next. Now, there's some sign languages where it seemed pretty obvious where they would fit. So, for example, since 6A is the default level for languages generally, it would seem that most village sign languages and many national sign languages would fit at that level. North American Indian Sign Language is instructive. It was used as a lingua franca across wide regions of the Great Plains in the 19th century, used primarily by hearing people, in fact. And so that clearly is a language of wider communication. It would fit at level 3. Since then, it has declined. The youngest signers who know it are middle-aged and above. They're in the grandparent generation. So now it would appear to fit into level 8A. There are some sign languages that we know have gone extinct in recent history. Martha's Vineyard, for example, isn't it? And that would be level 10. But application of this to other situations was more difficult. Some of the wording was awkward, like this. When the eGIDS talked in terms of speakers or oral use of the language, you could sort of see how it might apply to sign languages, but we felt it better to word it in a more neutral fashion. Users and face-to-face use. Now, face-to-face works fine at levels 6A, 6B. It didn't work quite so well at level 5, because what distinguishes level 5 from level 6 is that at level 5, the language is being used in ways that are not face-to-face. So we didn't want to use that wording there. Instead, we just said in vigorous use. It's a reference to level 6A, and then indicated how level 5 was different from 6A. The concept of intergenerational transmission is more problematic. The issue here is that deaf people in general do not learn the language from their parents. Most deaf children have hearing parents, well over 90%, and the vast majority of those parents don't sign. So instead, sign languages are learned by deaf people from their peers or from older deaf adults who they are not related to in settings such as schools and deaf associations. And that means there were wordings in the original eGIDS that implied parent-to-child transmission. The key factor, though, is not who the children are learning it from, it's just that they are learning it. And so we reworded to reflect that. Literacy was very important in the original eGIDS at levels 4 and 5, talking about written form of the language. This was part of Fishman's original formulation. The problem here is that there's no sign language in the world that has a writing system that's in widespread use. And yet, there are some sign languages where the level of educational support is comparable to what we find for spoken languages at level 4. And so we had a conflict here. What is it about levels 4 and 5 that seems appropriate for some sign languages in the absence of literacy? Well, we ended up on 3 factors. One is that there's institutional support for transmission of the language to children. It's not just being transmitted in the home, but the state, the educational system, is supporting transmission. Second factor is the existence of published literature. This is not necessarily print. It could be video. Could be distributed in another fashion. And the development of standardization. Those are the 3 factors that spoken languages use literacy for. Of course, there are other ways of promoting these factors, and sign languages have used those. And I'll let you look at some of the options here rather than reading them off. So having determined that those 3 factors are what's important for distinguishing levels 4 and 5 from level 6A, the next question is, what's the difference between level 4 and level 5? The intuitive idea is that level 4 is full support, level 5 is something intermediate between that and ordinary non-written use of the language. Deaf education around the world varies widely in terms of its methods and the extent to which it's supportive of a language. We tried to develop a criterion that would allow us to identify those languages that have support which is comparable to what spoken languages receive at level 4. It's a fairly strict standard from the perspective of deaf education. We're looking for a language in which most or all of deaf education in a country is characterized by use of a natural sign language, not a signed code for a spoken language, but the form of the language that's used by deaf people themselves. That language is used as a primary language of the classroom that all the participants, students, and teachers all know and all use, and the teachers are fluent in it. Most deaf education around the world does not meet these criteria. We've only identified just a handful of countries that we feel comfortable calling level 4. Anything that falls short of that, we've labeled it at level 5. Another issue that happens with sign languages is the matter of population loss. At least came to our attention through sign languages. The host population for a sign language is deaf people. And where there are not significant numbers of deaf people, then we don't find natural sign languages developing. And if the number of deaf people declines in a community, the sign language goes away. Hearing people may know the language, but the sign languages depend on deaf people for their preservation. So for example, on Martha's Vineyard, there was a thriving sign language in the 19th century. It was about 4% deafness on one end of the island. But as there are more people from the mainland moved onto the island, the gene pool was enriched, the incidence of deafness plummeted. Eventually, there were no more deaf people, and the sign language went extinct. A similar situation is happening in Africa now, in Ghana, a village called Adamorobe, A-D-A-M-O-R-O-B-E. In the 1960s, there was about 10% incidence of deafness. But in 1975, the chief proclaimed an edict that deaf people were not allowed to marry deaf people. Deaf people had to marry hearing. The chief had observed that when deaf married deaf, the children were all deaf. He wanted to eliminate deafness in the village, and that is what has happened. The rate of deafness is down about 1%. Now, there's a sign language there. It's used by hearing and deaf alike. All the deaf children are still learning it, but because there are fewer and fewer deaf children, the language is clearly in trouble. Now, the way that this had been stated previously in 6B is that not all children are learning the language. That's not the right description. The issue is that there are fewer children, and we can see that the language is in trouble. Then we compare that to what happens sometimes in spoken languages, where the whole host community is wiped out or severely damaged through warfare, through disease, natural disasters, or now the major problem is just migration to the cities. And as the population decreases, the language is under threat. So we reworded 6B simply, if the language is losing users, then we do not feel comfortable writing it at 6A. We put it at 6B. There are two other things that relate to how we interpret the levels that didn't require wording changes. One is the role of interpreters. In some countries, there are legal requirements that interpreters are made available for government and for education. In other words, for the functions that are covered by levels 1 through 4. And initial thought was, does that mean that, for instance, American Sign Language is a national language of the United States? Well, following that logic, interpreters are required for all languages of the world if, for example, somebody ends up in court in the U.S. That does not make every language in the world a national language of the United States. And more practically, if you look at level 4, the level of education, there's a literature that documents how when you have a deaf child in a hearing classroom with an interpreter, the experience that that deaf child has is not at all equivalent to a normal classroom situation. And they are not having the opportunity to acquire the language. And so basically we're saying at levels 1 through 4, provision of interpreters doesn't count. Okay? It's important, of course, to provide those functions, but as far as rating the language, we're not going to rate anything higher at level 4 and above unless there's some other reason to do so. Level 5, interpreters are important. As was on the slide earlier, interpreters are important. They have an impact on a sign language in helping spread standardization. And if government is behind the language by mandating interpreters, that's a level of institutional support that is relevant at level 5. In another matter of application, the question is, what does wider communication mean? How widely does a language need to be used outside of its host, ethnic group, in order to be considered wide communication? It's quite common, for example, for national sign languages, for there to be some hearing people who also know the language and use it with deaf people. The hearing people, their first language is a spoken language. The clear cases of level 3, wider communication, are situations like North American Indian Sign Language, where a sign language is used as a lingua franca among many spoken languages. Another example of that would be American Sign Language on the international level. Deaf people around the world use American Sign Language for communication with each other. even though that's not their first language. So those are the clear cases. And anything that's significantly short of that just doesn't count as a language of wider communication. So the situation in most countries where there are few hearing people know, associated with the community who know the language, that's not wide enough spread throughout the country to count as a language of wider communication. And similarly, in village sign languages where there might actually be more hearing people who know the language than deaf, still, that's a very local situation, and so it doesn't fit the definition of a language of wider communication. I'd like to make a couple final comments. One other thing. With regards to SCO, the ethnologue assigns eGIDS ratings on the basis of country by country. And as a result, if you look in there, the rating for ASL will be level 5, which is where it seems to fit within the United States. When you look on the international scale, it's level 3. But that's not, that rating isn't reported in the ethnologue because that's not how the ratings are assigned. Okay. With regard to how strong sign languages are, how resistant they are to language shift, there's some indications that sign languages are much more robust than spoken languages in some ways. So for example, the educational policy in deaf schools in the United States in the early part of the 20th century was very similar to the policy in BIA schools. And yet the results were very different. ASL thrived during that period. Well, at least it survived, and it's come out much stronger since. All the native languages of North America are in trouble. And so it seems like sign languages are relatively resistant to encroachment from a spoken language. On the other hand, if you look at village sign language situations, one of the concerns that many researchers have is that these small local languages, when they come in contact with the national sign language of the country, could be completely overrun by it. And there are indications in places that that could easily happen. We have an example right here on this island, and we'll be hearing about it in a few minutes. So that's a set of hypotheses that can be explored in further research. In summary then, it is possible to rate signed and spoken languages on the same scale in terms of their vitality, as long as you have the right definitions and assumptions. And more to the point, this study has shown how when we study sign languages, we're not just expanding our understanding of what language is. The issues that come up in the study of sign languages can be applied back to spoken languages and illuminate issues and factors that we might not have noticed otherwise. So thank you very much. Thank you. Questions or comments? Yes,
Brian. Did you have a rating of all the sign languages currently known to the ethnologue on that scale?
We have attempted to do so. They're guesses in many cases. Okay, just based on the information we had available, and they need to be refined but they're the best we could do on the information we had available.
So where would the majority fit in the middle?
I haven't looked at those figures. I would guess the majority are at level 6 and 5. Yes.
Just a couple of comments. On the percentages of deaf children with deaf parents, countries like US, England, Australia, France, they tend to have that percentage that you mentioned, around 10%. However, one of the things we've been recently discovering is that in many Southeast Asian countries like Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, there aren't any deaf children or deaf parents. And this significantly affects the transmission because in countries like the US, there's always a group of parents who can transmit the language. Mm-hmm. But in other countries, these sign languages are much more fragile because they have even less intergenerational transmission.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah.
That may be a problem later.
Mm-hmm.
One other comment about standardization. Also in these countries in Southeast Asia, one of the things that's being promoted in the education where sign language is promoted. The local sign language is being promoted, not a national sign language. So in Vietnam, we have three major sign languages. And so this may also affect the question with standardization, because one of the things that the programs are doing are trying to avoid national standardization. I don't know if that will have an effect, but I just wanted to comment on that.
Very, very interesting. Thank you.
Over here.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, just to back that up, in other places in the Caribbean, when I'm working there, many places in the Caribbean, the percentage of deaf children with deaf adults is very close to zero as well. And also another major issue there in endangering sign languages there, even national sign languages, is ASL and the spread of ASL, which is really happening, I think, all over the world.
Yeah, I see. There are indications that a sign language can, a whole community can shift very quickly. This happened in Costa Rica, for example, based, you know, some work that that Woody did a number of years ago. When ASL came in, practically the whole community adopted it. That's an oversimplification, but it happened very fast. Okay, any other comments?
Thank you all.
Okay.